You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNradio.com. And be sure to share.
Although the Second City isn't doing in-person shows, classes, or events, we're doing all of those things virtually. Head over to secondcity.com and you can sign up for a class. We've got really affordable drop-in classes where you might be improvising with people from other countries. We're doing corporate workshops and events. And we have a whole new slate of virtual shows that you can get tickets to. Get more comedy in your life by going to secondcity.com. Welcome to the world of Tony Ho from CBC Podcasts. It's an award-winning, bite-sized narrative comedy series about human relationships, familiar, hilarious, and sometimes unnerving. The troupe features Miguel Rivas, Adam Niebergall, and alumnus of the Second City mainstage, Roger Bainbridge. They will take you on a darkly comedic ride that finds honesty in every situation. You can listen and subscribe to Tony Ho on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So today's podcast is with Amy Solomon. She is a producer. She produced HBO's Silicon Valley, and she works on Barry. And she currently runs Alec Berg's production company, where she develops content for film and television. We talked to her from LA. She's got a new book. It's called Notes from the Bathroom Line, Humor, Art, and Low-Grade Panic from 150 of the Funniest Women in Comedy. It's this amazing collection. Enjoy the podcast.
The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Executive Director of Insights and Applied Improvisation at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, seeking connections, and finding a better way. This is Getting to Yes And.
Days can't be counted by the money spent. Today was just another better left unsaid. Days can't be counted by the time to rent. Tomorrow's just another like the one that comes next. The car on the highway that leads to the job at the desk by the boss with the elegant watch. The tick of the clock and the tick of the clock mark the moments till the ticking stops.
Amy Solomon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm such a fan. Thanks for having me.
You're from Chicago.
Yes.
Okay, tell us about your roots here.
So my dad's side of the family is from Chicago forever, since Chicago existed. And so I went to the same K through 12 as my dad and my grandpa. And then my great grandpa would have gone there, but it didn't exist yet.
Oh, which was that?
This is lab school at University of Chicago.
Lab school, sure.
But my great grandpa went to University of Chicago. So we've been in Chicago forever. Mm-hmm. I grew up near Second City, actually. But then we commuted to Hyde Park for school.
So where were you in Old Town?
So I'm more near Clark and Division.
Yeah. Okay.
So not so far. My family's not there anymore, which is always strange to stay in a hotel in the place where you're from.
Yeah. And you're city. I mean, you were actually smack dab in the middle of it. That's cool.
Yeah. I had to walk. I would take the Metro home from school and then the red line to Clark and Division. And then I had to walk down that horrible stretch of Division with all those Mothers Two and those horrific bars. It was the worst.
The Viagra Triangle. Yeah, that was.
I would have the biggest backpack on and be heading home from school, and it's beer on the ground and peanuts everywhere. It was so nasty. But
That's terrible. Gilda Radner, of course, is an alum of the Second City, and my wife and I have been involved in Gilda's Club from the early planning stages before it opened in Chicago. So I love how you open this book by writing, quote, "I grew up obsessed with Gilda Radner, as in worship at a homemade shrine next to my bunk bed. Believe me, I'm her reincarnated level obsessed." That led you down a wormhole of female comedy. And you're a young person. You were not, Gilda Radner was not on Saturday Night Live when you were discovered her, right?
No. So Gilda actually died 2 years before I was born. And
wow.
So I had this I have since moved on from this belief because it's unhinged, but I was so she died. And then she was in a raccoon for 2 years and then her spirit came to me kind of thing.
Could have happened. We're not going to count everything out.
No, she is too brilliant to claim that. But so I was obsessed. I got you know how they started releasing those DVD box sets of Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
So I got the like 1975, 76, like they started doing those early ones for some Hanukkah and lost my mind. And then basically just trolled eBay and everything for anything related to Gilda. And so I had VHSs of her Broadway show. I mean, I had everything. And I grew up right near Second City and was a huge Second City nerd. So it just all was this perfect storm. And so then I found this book called Titters that she had contributed to. That's this amazing, tons of Second City alums, but it's this amazing collection of humor writing by women from 1976. It's Lorraine Newman and Phyllis Diller and Candace Bergen. And I just got obsessed. It's, if you can find it online, there's like, you can find weird resale copies. I've hoarded a fair amount of them, but it's amazing. And it just was crazy to me that there was never another one of these after it. And so selfishly, I was like, let's do a new one.
That's great. Yeah, my comedy professor wife has got this amazing sort of library. And I found, actually, Jason Zinnemann from the New York Times was talking about this on Twitter. And she didn't see it, the tweet, luckily. But I found the Red Fox Encyclopedia of Black Comedy.
Amazing.
It's unbelievable. It is like it was such a find. And she like was so happy about it. So
cool.
Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about what this book is?
Yeah. So basically, okay. So what was so magical about Titters was that it gives you, it's basically a time capsule. And mm-hmm. I didn't understand a lot of the references because it was 76 and I wasn't alive. but I basically wanted to make a new time capsule version. And so in putting all those pieces together, it just gives you this like really visceral sense of what they were all talking about and thinking about and worrying about. And there's also just stuff that's super goofy and one off. There's like this Dirty Eloise cartoon that's unbelievable. But so I wanted to do a big new collection by all my favorite women in comedy. And so, yeah, it's basically, I basically told all of them, write whatever you want. I sent a Google Doc of prompts that I thought were like good themes and questions and some kind of ideal types of pieces, stuff I felt like we had to touch on. Mm-hmm. But otherwise I was just kind of like, whatever's on your mind, like do what you feel. And it can take any format. There's sheet music, there's comics, there's cartoons, there's satire, like anything. There's, you know, script pages, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I just felt like in letting them all do that, it would all sort of coalesce into this sort of new time capsule. And I think they all kind of thematically ultimately feel like one.
Yeah, no. I like the eclectic nature of not knowing whether you're going to come upon an essay or a cartoon or, you know, some other random like illustration. So the prompts would be things like, you have like, what's a song, album, movie, book that an ex ruined for you? Because one of my favorites of that was because Jamie Loftus responded, my high school boyfriend broke up with me to have more time to play the saxophone. And you know, a Kenny G solo hits different after that.
It's so good.
This is perfect.
It's so good. Yeah. So there was stuff like that, but there was also just like, here, you know, I want to talk about, it literally, there was a list at the top of it of stuff I felt we had to touch on. And I remember just being like, Michelle Obama, like she has to be in there. So just any jumping off point for anybody.
It's interesting. So there, I counted at least 14 Second City folks are in the book, which is great.
And, amazing.
And many of whom I hired there. And what's interesting, this, so I didn't plan this in terms of a series of podcast guests. But my last two were Dr. Marissa Porges, who is the head of an all-girls, the Baldwin School outside of Philly. And she's a former Navy pilot who worked in the Obama administration and did counterterrorism work in the Middle East. And her book is about how to raise strong, resilient girls.
Amazing.
And then I spoke to Joanne Lublin, this is yesterday, a journalist who wrote a book called Power Moms about Boomer and Gen X women in work and life. And she actually introduces us to a word in the book about how you handle sort of being a woman in the workplace and then a mom. And she says, it's not work-life balance, it's work-life sway.
Mm.
And I've been sort of obsessed with this concept. And then having read your collection and these other two books and recognizing that the centering of a female voice is something that has been in process And I will never forget this. Basically, well, I was on a call the other day with our folks at our training center and looking at the breakdown. And there's more women studying than men now.
Cool.
And that was not the case. But the trend started after I hired Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, and then they left Second City and went on. And I think back to that cast with Rachel Dratch, and you know that suddenly you could feel the tide turn. And now we're in this point where I think it would have been hard to find 150 female comedy writers, and I don't sense that it was hard for you this time.
No, and honestly, there are so many I didn't even get to include. 150 was like a low number. I totally agree that. I mean, that Second City cast, and then a lot of the women that I grew up obsessed with are in the book. So Mary Soane and Shelley Gossman and Katie Rich and Amber Ruffin. Like, Second City was like the big thing for me. I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass, but so I do think that generation was a huge thing for sure. And yeah. Rachel Dratch is in the book, which was like my greatest dream.
It's okay. So now knowing the generations you saw, because Tawny is in the book too.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine you saw Let Them Eat Chaos on the main stage.
Yes.
That was such a great show.
So good. Yeah. Tawny and the like a little bit younger is Tawny and Poonam and Shantira. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's every cool lady of all time. And Aidy Bryant, when she got hired, I freaked. She's not in the book because she's busy as hell, but that's totally fine, Aidy. Don't worry.
No, yeah, Aidy's incredible. I feel like no one said no. I mean, I'm sure a couple people did.
So many people said no, you have no idea.
Oh, really?
Which is completely fine. I mean, so many people were just, it was so busy. It's so hard to... It's a hard thing to just be like, you can kind of write whatever you want. You can kind of set your own deadline. Some women were like, I need you to tell me what to write, and I need you to tell me when by, because I just can't wrap my brain. It was so interesting to actually watch people's different workflows and how they approach their just their deadlines and stuff like that.
Well, I think, in many ways, creativity desires constraints, you know. Totally. like give me the box and I can then kind of, when you just sort of say to someone, do anything, sometimes that's that can cause just total panic.
Totally. Though it's like, it's kind of a combo too, because I would be like, well, I need it ultimately by October 1st. So you know yourself, do you want to set a fake deadline of August 15th? And when that doesn't happen, we reset it, kind of thing. So sometimes when people do their own rather than me, they feel more like, oh, I set this, I got to do it, you know? But I don't know. It was, I will say it was herding cats.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes.
A lovely, brilliant cats, but many, many cats.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Improvisers in particular, but it's true of stand-ups too. They're just not, I often say that, my many years of hiring people at Second City, I hired people to immediately disrespect me because they just have such a thing about authority and rules and timelines and that sort of thing.
Completely. It was nice though, when there's so many women, someone would apologize. They'd be like, oh my God, I've been so slow to write you back. And it's like, there are 149 other women. You're definitely not the worst right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. The book is broken into these theme chapters. Did you have those before, or did they arrive when the material started coming in?
They arrived from the material. So I really didn't want to dictate those. And then they just kind of sort of started categorizing themselves. It was clear family. It became clear family would be one quickly, and clearly I wanted that. Entertainment became clear because there's one, there's like a rom-com satire and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So they became clear pretty quickly, and they all slotted in pretty nicely. It wasn't too hard. I had my friend Julia Monahan, who helped me a ton with the book. We spent this day with a bajillion note cards on the floor trying to like visually put it into these columns, and I owe her forever for that day.
Do you want to share some of your favorites with us? I have a couple too that I pulled out.
Yeah. Oh, it's so, I mean, okay, let's be clear. I love them all. They're all my babies.
Yes.
I don't want to be rude. I don't know. I guess we could talk about some Second City ladies. Poonam's is amazing.
Yep.
She has this schedule that's like her birthday week. And this amazing gal, Kay Arvidson, did the design. A lot of the joy of the book, too, is working with these unbelievable mm-hmm. illustrators and designers. And she did it like a Gmail calendar. And it's basically just, what are some of my favorites? Like 10 a.m., please eat banana in backpack before it rots. And I always leave myself reminders like that. Yep. So I love it. Call doc about vag situation. Do not scratch. It's so good. It's not all vaginas. To any men listening, it's not all vaginas. Don't worry.
One of my favorites is Tammy Sager, and it's under A Lie You've Told to Get Out of Plans. And she says, I once told a housekeeper I was moving 2,000 miles away because I didn't know how to fire her. I cleared the lie with my therapist first. And it, like, knowing Tammy, this is absolutely true. 100% true, which is why Emily Heller's is also great in that same section. She says, anyone who answers this question with an actual excuse they've used is not paranoid enough about the person they've lied to reading this book.
Yeah. Tammy has some amazing answers. Tammy also, there's one that's about what's the most dehumanizing thing you ever did for a job. And she had to, at Boom Chicago, she had to give out
flyers.
Improv flyers at the Anne Frank house, which is... so horrible.
She also has one in here that I pulled out, which is, this is there a commonality that many of your exes share? And she goes, I dated both Sonic guys, so maybe French toast sticks.
Yeah.
She dated Peter Gross and TJ and J.D. Chagadowski.
I know, that's a really good Chicago deep cut there.
That is a very Chicago deep cut, as those Sonic guys.
It's so good. I know. Oh, I'm so when they're like, I was so excited when every gal agreed, because I'm a fan of all of them, but Tammy's like an icon for me. So when she said yeah, I freaked.
So I'm curious. So you're working on Barry right now, right? Is that your day job or
yeah, no? We're paused. We're going to shoot once people are more vaccinated, because we don't want to kill Henry Winkler. I think the fastest ticket to hell. So we're going to wait. We were about to shoot season 3 of Barry when everything exploded. So we're waiting. But so, yeah, my boss and I have this deal at HBO. So we develop TV for HBO and movies too.
Yeah. I'm curious about your opinion on this. So you see a lot of, comedy talent in these sort of social media circles.
Mm-hmm.
I have an opinion on this. I'm curious at you, because I feel like, you know, especially in Hollywood, they were at a certain point, all these agencies had people just scouring YouTube. And I think there's a very big difference between someone who knows how to navigate that situation and that world and be funny in there, and then when they have to then go to sort of scripted or stage, or tell me what your opinion is of that. In terms of talent,
I don't think there's anything harder in the world than writing a pilot. It's so hard. Pilots are horrible. Most shows you watch, the pilot is bad. Yes. So like I always tell people to read Cheers or watch the Cheers pilot. I think that's like the most perfect pilot of all time. Mm. But so it's so hard. So Pat, my friend is this guy, Pat Regan, who's a comedian in New York. And he was he's a stand-up. He has an amazing podcast. He does amazing tweets. He's so goddamn funny. And for a while it was like, why isn't Pat the most like well-paid writer in the world? You know? And mm-hmm. it was like, because he couldn't get a pilot out, because a pilot's so hard.
Yeah.
And so finally he started writing essays and ultimately wrote an amazing pilot, and he like got it down. But it is really hard to switch the mindset to the page. You know, you can be so funny and make the funniest YouTube videos or Instagram stories or whatever, but to get the discipline to sit down is a whole other talent, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I love Sarah Cooper's work in the sort of social sphere. And then her special, I was just like, this is such a miss.
Watch it. I'm so bad.
It's both in terms of how it's conceived and then knowing how to utilize, you know, her particular kind of talent. And they're just different mediums.
Yeah. I also don't think anything is ever good rushed. So that was she's so hot right now. Let's do this right now. But as my boss, Alec Berg, always says, the worst reason to make a TV show is to make a TV show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really true.
And I was, so you worked on Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very bro-y show.
Well, the amazing thing about it is it's satirizing an unbelievably brilliant culture, you know. But that is the biggest group of sweet boys in the world. And Amanda Crew, who's the gal amongst them, is amazing. Yes.
Yeah, I remember, I have this very vivid memory of going to Lincoln Lodge. And because TJ Miller was doing a thing there, and he was in a touring company at Second City at the time. And the guy who went up before him was Kumail. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I just saw the best stand-up comic I think I've ever seen, you know, who wasn't a name yet. I actually tried to do stuff with him, but I just didn't like, I wasn't involved in stand-up and he wasn't interested in improvising.
Yeah.
But so we had some lovely conversations, but, and I think he's just done tremendous work.
He's unbelievable. You know who the other person was who I saw at Second City, who I was like, that is a star. The second I saw him was John Reynolds, who's on Search Party now. Oh yep. My God. We were like in this training center stuff at the same time in like 2009 or whatever. And I saw him do his like training center graduation show or whatever. And I was like,
That's a star.
Never seen it. Never seen anything like it.
I'm pretty sure his last day when he left Second City, he gave me the finger as he was walking down the hallway.
Oh, no.
It was him or someone else. And I just laughed and I was like, what? Also not a big fan of authority. John
yeah. That's I think pretty common amongst these comedy, but yeah, that was my first job in LA was Silicon Valley, which is absurdly lucky. And I mean, Mike Judge and Alec Berg, I'm sure you talk about this, but like, it's the people at the top that set the tone. That's true of like every workplace. And those guys set just an amazing, collaborative, lovely place to work. And that group of people it's like my family. It's the best.
We had Ken Kwapis on the pod.
I listened. It was amazing.
Oh, you listened? Yeah,
I bought his book.
That's exactly it. His book in terms of how to direct, because you're the leader when you're the director, and Ken like doesn't abide assholes, and totally. He learns people's name.
Totally.
And it's just amazing that it's these small acts that mean so much. And honestly, I don't know Hollywood right now as well as you do, but certainly in, let's say, in the theater world, it's mostly not good.
Yeah. No, I have been insane, like truly insanely lucky. I love what he was saying. The names thing, and the amazing thing about Silicon Valley was it was pretty much the same crew for 6 years. So wow. You really get to know people, and Mike and Alec both taught me to have just like the most amount of respect for everyone. You have no idea the level of artistry each of these people is accomplishing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like Alec always says, and he and Mike directed a lot of the episodes of Silicon. And Alec is always like, being a director is always being the dumbest person in the room. Cause the costumer knows what to do. The production designer knows what to do. And you're ultimately like trying to make it hew as well to the script as you can. But a lot of times Alec will be like, whatever you think is right to the costumer,
right.
You know?
Right.
And then the thing about No Assholes, when we were casting Barry, we told the casting directors, like, life's too short. Just bring us good people. Like, if you've heard someone's a nightmare or experienced it, like, please just don't even read them. And that's how we ended up with, like, Henry Winkler, the kindest man to ever live. And that whole cast is Stephen Root is, like, a full national treasure. And Sarah Goldberg, who's in the book, who plays Sally. And she wrote an amazing piece. So, yeah. And Darcy Carden. Like, it's just the loveliest people.
Yeah.
So I think that is as loud as you can shout that as your rule, shout it, you know?
Yeah. For the first person who like instilled that in me was Harold Ramis.
Mm-hmm.
Harold's whole thing was like, you sort of lead with kindness on the set and, you know, and really I think the saddest thing is that, you know, he and Bill Murray had that sort of breakup. Mm-hmm. Which was based on the fact that Bill was not being respectful on the set. And it was like and you know, they before Harold died, they had their moment to reconcile, which is great. And I think I've heard Bill's better now than he was. But there is an interesting thing in linking together the various interviews I've done with academics about leadership and artists about that, is that, in fact, I think female qualities are the ones, the feminine qualities are the ones that make for absolutely the best leaders.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you there. Do you think
I need you to put up a vigorous argument?
I do think on a set, everyone's, you're pouring. Okay. First of all, I think people, listeners of this podcast probably understand somewhat, but like, set is horrible. Like, you get there mm-hmm. so early, you're there so late, you're missing stuff with your family, you're like eating communal foods and you're worried about germs. I mean, now more than ever, but it's tough, and you're pouring your heart and soul into it, whether you're a costumer or a best boy or an actor. And so it's just a lot of feelings in a very tight space, you know? And so I think women's instincts to be like, how are you feeling? Like,
caregiving. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, what's going on at home? And just, I think that that's like how everyone should act. I mean, in every workplace, like, I think being mindful of just like, my big thing in all of life is you don't know what's going on with someone outside of stuff. You just don't know. You never know. And so always approaching people with that, I think, is the best thing you can do.
Yeah. The two things that people have sort of said to me that resonated recently was assume good intent. Start there as your North Star. And then when someone does react in a way that's, you know, sort of surprising or upsetting or whatever it is, you know, wonder what hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe use that as a place to sort of, you know, go with the conversation, because otherwise you end up where we are now, whereas everyone's just shouting at each other and it's like, it's the worst thing that ever.
Completely. Yeah. It's so hard from the like director producer perspective. Alec and I talk about this a lot. You're often like shutting people's dreams down all day, because like the props guy will come in and have this like brilliant, crazy prop he's so excited about. And you're like, you know what? That is amazing, but ultimately it's just not what we envisioned. It's like a little too much. It kind of is like a hat on a hat for the joke, you know?
Yeah.
And with a hat on a hat is a dorky term we use all the time.
I love hat on a hat.
But then, so you're having to tell this prop master who did this amazing work to find this prop. Like, you know, okay, there's an insane scene in Silicon Valley. What is it? Season 3? Whatever. They go to this like porn convention and there are these dildos. And we had this, you do these prop show and tells, and we had a full dildo prop show and tell. And it was, I have a video of Alec walking down a line of like vibrating and like dildos going like every direction. And ultimately, like, we needed the dildos not to distract too much from the scene. And so you're saying like, you did an amazing job, but ultimately like, we can't use the dildos you're most excited about. And that's like a little, it sucks for them in that moment, you know? So you just have to not tiptoe around everything, but just there's feelings tied up in everything, you know?
Yep. Before I ask you for a yes and story, is there a female comic voice in this book that we don't know, that doesn't have a national name, that you want to highlight or spotlight?
That's a good question.
Because most are known if you follow comedy.
Yeah, some are kind of quieter gals. My friend Halcyon is an amazing gal who actually now I think is running a kids show for Netflix. But Halcyon Person has a really beautiful piece in the book about being a Black woman and being angry, and how you basically, it's funny, but how you square that in today's world, because she knows she wants to be angry and she deserves to, but also comes up against these stereotypes. That piece is so good. Oh, it's so hard. There's like a lot of names who are like unbelievable powerhouse TV writers, but you don't know their face. You know what I mean? Joanna Kalo wrote this amazing book. That's like a piece in the book that's like a day in the life. And it's about how she like basically is so desperate to get away from her daughter to do work. And then the second she gets away from her daughter to do work, she's like, oh my God, the nanny's with her and bonding with her, and I'm missing out on everything. Mm-hmm. And I just thought she so perfectly captured that issue. So I don't know. Yeah. My dream is people like come for the people that they love and then find people that they get obsessed with, that they didn't know before.
Well, so that's the thing, because you have these sections where people kind of throw in their sort of one-liners or response, you start to, if you don't know someone's sort of comic voice, you're learning it through multiple encounters with them.
Totally.
So I think in many ways, I mean, you did the thing you set out to do in terms of what Tears provided for you and for generations of women who are interested in comedy. Now, you know, they can go in here, and it's interesting. I'm going to get at Titters, because I really want to put them next to each other and see how much that has changed.
Yeah. If you can't find it, I'll send you one, because I hoarded some. Don't tell other people, but I'll send you one.
All right. Terrific. All right. So we always end the podcast with our guests doing a yes and story. So in the parlance of improvisation, when people are making something out of nothing, they get nowhere by saying no. We say they don't really get that far by saying yes. You say yes and. You affirm and contribute in order to explore and heighten. Do you have a story for us?
Yeah. So this, I tell this story a lot, actually, when I'm giving advice to younger people trying to break into TV and film and stuff. But so I was, okay, I moved out to LA after I graduated from college and had no job and was just like, I will take whatever. But my dream was I really wanted to be a writer's assistant. And that was like what everybody tells you to do if you want to be a writer. You want to be a writer's assistant because you're in the writer's room and you're there and you're meeting all the writers and you're watching it go down. But those jobs are so coveted. Like that, it's so hard. And that's often someone who's, you know, a PA who then gets bumped up to writer's assistant because they're already in there. It's hard. So I was looking. And then eventually my best friend went on vacation with her family and they were like, do you want to come? We're going to Colorado. And I was like, oh, well, I'm in the middle of this job search, but I'll go. That's like so sweet to invite me. So I went. And while I was on this vacation, I got a call about this job that was the assistant to the showrunner of Silicon Valley, Alec Berg, who I still work for. So you know how this works out. Yeah. But so I basically left the vacation early to go interview with him. And I was like, ugh, it's not a writer's assistant job. I want to be a writer's assistant, you know, and like, will I ever be able to access the room from here? And like, ultimately, I yes anded. First, I left the vacation. And then I also took it ultimately. And it is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And if I had waited for a writer's assistant job, who knows if I ever would have gotten it. And also, I found out I hate the writer's room.
That's interesting.
I don't like listening to people chew. And that's all it is all day.
Wow.
I just can't. I've learned that I need to go to set and go to meetings and like boop around. I can't like sit there. And so saying yes and to this thing that wasn't exactly what I wanted, I tell young people that like, getting in the general vicinity is amazing. If it's not the exact thing you thought, that might be for the best. You know, I'm so lucky that that was the thing that I got.
My version of that story is graduated college. My dad got me an informational interview with Bernie Sollins, who had sold Second City and was starting his own theater. And he was basically like, if you want to work in theater, work in a theater. And so he eventually hired me for his new theater. But the 6 months before, he got me a job and I was washing dishes at Second City. So, I mean, totally. You know, and we're both in our places where we're still with our people.
Totally. You just have to get near it. I told someone that recently. I was like, this was pre pandemic, but I was like, get a job as one of those, the bartenders or the servers at one of the comedy clubs. Like you get to see it live and you meet those people and you get to like learn the, you know, how it works and hopefully people tip you. I love that Second City joke about like, if you could see through this wall, that's the main stage. And then everyone turns and they're like, you can't see through the wall.
Yeah. Oh, and standard tipping in Chicago is 90%.
Yeah. I love it. I gotta say, I miss all the like Skokie and Naperville folk who come in and laugh their asses off.
Yeah, I miss them too. I haven't seen them in a year.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, I was in a meeting recently about what the reopening plans are, and we literally were talking about, do we turn up Comedy Club into our hybrid space with cameras? So that, because I think this is going to happen. I think that now that we've found that we have these audiences, these virtual audiences, there is going to be elements of our stuff that will be available every night of the week online. And think about yourself. I mean, that would be, you do that. Miss it and you'd be able to be like, oh, I want to check this out.
Totally. Yeah. Have you seen that Conan's been broadcasting from Largo in LA, which is like one of the amazing theaters here? Yeah, which is really cool. And they taped like improvised Shakespeare at one point and like did some stuff. But yeah, I think that's cool. That's, if there's a silver lining to this absolute fuck fest of a year. I don't mean fuck fest in a good way. Sometimes that's
bad fuck fest.
Bad fuck fest. Yeah, I would love to watch Second City from here, you know? So if we can figure that stuff out, that's good.
The book is called Notes from the Bathroom Line, Humor, Art, and Low-Grade Panic from 150 of the Funniest Women in Comedy. Amy Solomon, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. So fun.
Getting the Yes And is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor and producer is L.F. Garris. We get support at the Second City from Jenny Crowley, Abby Bumbledare, Mike Farinaccio, and Colleen Fahey. The music you hear at the beginning and end of the show is by Jukebox the Ghost. If you have questions, guest ideas, or if you want more information on working with Second City Works, you can go to www.secondcityworks.com, or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.
Survive.